It is September the 24th, Wednesday afternoon. Let's check in now with Jackie Vegas. She's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County and will help us take up the futures markets and the trade in Chicago for the afternoon. Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time with me. I want to start out with the FSA acreage figures because these have bounced around in the marketplace for about 3 years now, each and every year. The preliminary numbers come out in monthly assessments from time to time. We have had a couple of sets so far this year, and they have pointed, at least to this time, towards fewer acres than many had expected, though I'm hearing some different things about that in the marketplace. What do you hear?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, I looked at those numbers and thought that they seem to be awfully low in contrast to other years when you look at a percentage of the expected crop. So in looking around, there's no penalty for not certifying your acres this year for FSA like there had been in the past due to the Farm Bill timing. And I made some calls to some of my bigger clients, and I just said, you know, do you realize this? And they said, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's. We don't have to certify. I haven't certified yet because I'm going to wait. If I need to change something, if in the past I have to pay a fee, and now I can change and I don't have to pay a fee. So I'm just plain not going to turn them in until later on. And so, you know, some of the implications that the August and September report had, you know, are certainly don't seem to be bearing out as to a real a good indicator for what actual final acreage is going to be. Talk about throwing another wrench, you know, into the mix. But what I understand, you can certify right up until December and still be part of the Farm Bill next year.
Well, that should be interesting. I guess we'll find out more once the October crop production numbers come out, because that's usually the month in which USDA makes changes. But they will have to be aware of this as well in order to get an acreage figure that's fairly accurate. And I suppose we wouldn't really see a good number until we get the final numbers in January from the United States Department of Agriculture.
That's true. That's very, very true. And, you know, when you looked on Monday night on the crop progress, you know, and you looked at how slow harvest is, you know, some people said, oh, my goodness, you know, they're way behind. But I don't think it's a matter of being way behind, at least in the guys that I've been talking to. It's just there's so much crop there. It's going slower than it's gone in years past. And so I would expect that we're going to lag behind any of our normal years as we go along. And I guess we're going to do the same thing in acres.
All right. Well, let's take up some of what's been happening in the field. Have you been getting yields from around the Midwest?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, when you look at some of the numbers that came out this morning, and I feel pretty confident in the numbers, Illinois averaging 265 to 275, Iowa 218 to 250, Indiana 240 to 260, Missouri 180 to 190. Beans here 68 to 73, Iowa 50 to 71, Indiana 65 to 80. And I have plenty of clients that would confirm all those numbers. But the one that shocked me was I talked to one of my Pennsylvania clients today, and he would be in southeastern Pennsylvania. 97-day corn, a flat 247 dry for an entire farm. I mean, that is just, it's unheard of. He said it's just absolutely unheard of.
That is something in Pennsylvania on that short of corn. Holy smokes, that is a big crop. So I suppose what you're trying to tell us is no matter what they do with the acreage, this is going to be a big crop one way or the other, at least for corn.
Well, that's what it looks like, yes, at least for corn. And you know, the bean yields are exceptionally good, too, but, you know, we're still subject to a lot of things in the northern tier as far as the bean yields go. And, you know, same thing with acres. You know, I was hoping we'd get some indication if Kansas and Nebraska double crop beans were actually in the bean acres, but now we probably won't know that until the very end either. And so I guess what I'm saying, Todd, is be prepared. I'm very concerned about 2015 beans and even 2016 beans. You know, you look back to years when we had this type of a projected carryout, and what some people are talking now is we could even hit 500 million on beans. I don't know if I agree with that or not. But, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon to see a 6 or 7 in front of these numbers. You know, why would a person want to wait to find out? You know, why not just get in here and do something in the marketplace? And you know, Todd, that I talk a lot about options, okay? And then there's guys who say, well, you just don't like futures. Well, that's not true. I like futures. When futures give my clients their best opportunity. So I put together, I wanted to give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
If you were selling November 15 beans today in the futures, you could get 9.55. You could come in and you could buy a November 9.80 put, which was 25 cents in the money, and you could sell two November $10 calls and actually get that whole thing done, premium and collected premium, for a 7.5 cent credit. Now, what does that mean? Okay, if the market would expire at $9, and I doubt if you're going to find a whole lot of clients out there or a whole lot of people who don't think that beans could be at 9 or below, but let's just say it's at 9. Your futures would give you 55 cents minus one commission. Your option strategy would give you 87.5 cents. How do you get to that? Well, it's 980 is where you took the put position. $9 is where the futures are. That's 80, plus a 7.5 cent credit that you receive from selling those two November $10 calls, minus three commissions. From my perspective, doing that strategy with the way that we sit is better for my client. It gives him a possible 30 more cents to be able to work with. And so that's why I just have been thinking about that a lot. You know, guys say, well, you know, in this kind of environment, you just want to sell the futures. Well, that's one of the special things about options. They do give you opportunity to be able to lock in a higher price. Can't do that with futures.
Hey, let's move on to some other things. Thank you for going through that, by the way. It does help to think about how the marketing process works. But as we look today, there are some fundamentals in the marketplace that we still have to deal with, sometimes more in the Northwest Corn Belt than here, but it is a problem here as well, and that's the ability to get trains in. What are you hearing fundamentally about the train situation, locomotive availability, whether we can get cars, and how quickly we can move this crop out of the Midwest?
Yeah. Well, there's a twofold issue here. You know, when you look at trains, one of my guys up in he'd be in southern Minnesota, but he told me the other day they actually got a train into his elevator. So he stopped by and he said, "Hey, I see you got a train in." He said, "That is awesome." And the guy said, "Yeah, we had to pay 60 cents a bushel more for freight than we normally would." So, you know, that's the question I have to ask myself: is this the way of the future? You know, you were at Waseca when you heard that the railroad said, "You want 15 trains, we'll give you one." You know, to me, it's a situation where the railroad is now saying, "Hey, we've got the opportunity to make huge amounts of money hauling oil and doing everything else. If you guys want to use our trains, you're going to have to pay more." And that's the unfortunate part, because that usually gets passed on to us. And I shouldn't say usually, it always some way gets passed on to us. And then you take and you look at, because of the train situation, you know, our elevators right now in many places have very, very high dump charges and very high flat fees for storing anything. They're discouraging people from doing DP. They're discouraging HTAs. Why? It's because they need to own the grain in order to move it out. If you store it, if you DPA it, if you HTA it, you're sitting in a situation where they have to wait for you to actually price it. And so that has another fold to everything, and that is, when you sell them cash, and especially in this environment, they sell the futures to protect themselves from having paid too much. So, you know, you've got guys saying, "Well, this market's way too low. It can't go any lower." Well, as long as you have hedge pressure, and as long as all of the grain that's moving to storage is moving now, which is normally what's going to happen, you're going to have this continuing thing going on. They're buying the grain so that they can move it. They're selling the futures to protect themselves from paying too much. So that's why I think, for a lot of folks, they just never thought they'd see these prices, but it's kind of a self-perpetuating situation. It happens all the time, but it's not normally, you don't normally see them trying to force people to sell across the scale unless they really need the grain. This isn't a case of needing the grain. This is a case of needing to move the grain.
Hey, one final thing. Can you talk about bean basis? Because we have transitioned now from needing beans to, hey, we can use the beans, and the basis has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. What a scare, I'll tell you, because, you know, a week ago in central Illinois, bean basis was plus 275 over the November contract. It is now plus 10 cents over the November contract. So it just goes to show you how things change when the availability is there and how important it is to take advantage of quick ship or anything else that can be done to maybe, you know, put some more money into our pocket. You know, with the dollar hitting a four-year high today, boy, that's a very, very scary situation in for the long term. you know, because it weakens everything. We've talked about that already, you know, where oil is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world. Higher dollar, higher cost to them. You know, them being Eurozone, Russia, China, Japan, people we depend on to buy from us. Higher dollar is difficult on Mexico, too. So, very tough.
Hey, thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois.